David Knight.
Well, it's the last broadcast day that we have here during the week for Real News before the new year. So we're going to be taking a look at what is ahead in the new year. We're not going to spend a lot of time on the past, talking about the people who have died this year, the celebrities who have died. No, we're going to take a look at some things that happened in the past to give us a context for what we think is going to happen in the future. And we're going to lay out in this program today what I think is going to be happening in the future. I think we're going to have a civil war in D.C., in Washington. I think that is being lined up. Trump has been taking a lot of hits in what we have called a coup. I think there's a counter coup that is brewing. And we had a lot of things that happened around a week ago, December the 21st. We remember we had even a hashtag on Twitter, Sessions Awakes. A lot of things happened with that. So we're going to talk about the executive order. We're going to talk about the fact that there's prosecutors are going to be looking at Uranium One. Also, the House committee is going to be looking at McCain's associations with this dossier. Even Politico has broken information about Obama shutting down investigations into Hezbollah. And so in the context of all of that, we had an executive order saying people who were involved in corruption, people who were involved with groups that were involved in corruption or violation of human rights are going to get their assets taken. And so this looks like a full-on war that's going to be happening. We talked about this a great deal yesterday, I did. Today we're going to have joining us Roger Stone, Jerome Corsi, Lee Stranahan to break down what they think is behind all of this. Is this going to be a counter coup this next year? And then the other big issue is going to be whether or not there's going to be a war. We've seen the press reports. An individual who has high connections with the intelligence community, who has been involved in wargaming exercises in the past, who says that based on his information, he thinks that we're going to be in a war with North Korea and perhaps possibly China within 12 weeks. You know, there's an interesting parallel to September 11th, and we're going to talk about this. It was a bioterrorism exercise called Dark Winter. It happened June 22nd to June 23rd, 2001. So it was about 10 weeks before 9/11. And in that, they posited, and we'll talk about this in detail as we look at what is coming together in terms of war with North Korea. But they were talking about a smallpox bioterror incident. And interestingly enough, the usual suspects that they had were Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden as being the ones behind the attack. Kind of a conditioning for the people who were going to be the first responders, the military, who was going to be called on to go to war after 9/11. It was going to happen in a few weeks. So are we going to have a real terror attack? Are they concerned about that? Are they preparing for that? Or are we going to have a false flag terror attack that may be used to accompany this kickoff here so that we don't look like we're acting preemptively? We're going to take a look at what I think may be coming up in terms of a war within the next 12 weeks with North Korea. A lot of signs indicating that, as well as the civil war cranking up in Washington, D.C. Today we had 12 people die in a Belmont fire in the Bronx area. You know, when I look at this and the tragedy of this, as the mayor said, this is the worst fire tragedy we've seen in this city in at least a quarter of a century. 12 people dead in a fire, and it was a tragedy. When we look at this particular tragedy, and it is headlines everywhere, Drudge, everybody has got this this tragedy. It struck suddenly. It was concentrated to one area. All these people died at once. But, you know, there are other things that don't get our attention. Very quietly, in really just the automotive trade press that I like to read, because I'm worried about the takeover of our infrastructure. It's a story about the Takata airbag death toll that is now 20 people worldwide. Yeah, it wasn't localized to one area. It wasn't sensational. But 20 people, not 12 people. And nobody is talking about this. And this is something that was put out there by the government for our safety. For our safety. And yet, as we've seen throughout the history of the airbag, these things, even when it was proven that they were killing women and children, we couldn't take them out for our safety.
It's the Real News. from the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this Friday before the New Year's on Monday. We're going to talk about what's coming up in the New Year. As I said at the top of the hour, I believe that we're going to be looking at a civil war in Washington, D.C. A lot of things are indicating this. We had the hashtag Sessions Awakes. We had the executive order that I spent a great deal of time talking about yesterday. Also, Sessions, and this is the thing that got all the attention, the fact that they were going to start looking into Uranium One, as reported by NBC News a week ago. What people didn't notice is the thing that really had teeth, and that is the executive order. So we talked about that. But we've also had some other interesting things. We've had a question. Did the Awans cut a deal? They had a January court date. And this is the guy in the Daily Caller who has been focused on these this family who was hired at very, very high pay grade by Debbie Wasserman Schultz. They had access to a lot of information on congressmen and a lot of the people who were involved in the DNC and other issues. And it was interesting because his wife, remember, got out of the country. And she has now agreed to come back and testify. And now we see that there was a January court date that has mysteriously been taken off of the docket. Does that mean that some of these Awans are going to be, some of the Awan family are going to be turning as witnesses in what is coming up? I mean, that's another indication that the Attorney General and the Department of Justice are starting to get their ducks in a row for prosecution. Also, House Intelligence Committee is subpoenaing McCain associate David Kramer for involvement in the Trump dossier. And as you remember yesterday, when I talked about the executive order, there was one of the 13 individuals specifically named. Six of them had very close ties to the Clinton Foundation. One of those individuals was had ties to McCain as well. And then we've had even Politico talk about Obama's doing favors for Hezbollah, shutting down investigations by the DEA as this terrorist organization got into drug running as well. So in light of all this, the one thing that I think really is the foundation of all this and is really going to give them the weapon that they need, it's a tactic, a strategy that has been used by prosecutors, you know, people like Rudy Giuliani, who knows Donald Trump very well. Jeff Sessions, of course, loves the idea of civil asset forfeiture. The RICO statute has been used in the past to come after organized crime because they cannot get a conviction. They realize they could not get a conviction against these mafia figures. They had the best lawyers, had so much money, they could delay this thing. They could play all these legal tricks. So they came up with the RICO statute, which was subsequently abused, I would say. Not a big fan of it, but it was the way that they got convictions against these organized crime families. They took their money first to shut down that Cadillac defense, if you will. You're not going to get the Clintons unless you take their money, unless you take the money of the Clinton Foundation. And it's not going to be very hard to make connections to these corrupt individuals. Again, many of them listed specifically in that executive order. So I think that that is the beginning and the basis of this. I think they're going after the same kind of tactic that they've used against organized crime families, because that's what the Clintons are. They're an organized crime family, very organized, and the biggest mafia they have ever gone against. And so this is an executive order saying that they're going to take the assets of these individuals and anybody that was doing business with them. And that would include people like the Clintons. So we'll see what happens with that part of it. And we're going to be talking later in the broadcast. I want to get the opinions of Roger Stone, Jerome Corsi, Lee Stranahan, who's been following this kind of corruption very closely for a long time. Of course, one of the individuals mentioned in this was Natalia Veselnitskaya, part of the Magnitsky Act, the corruption that was going on in Russia and so forth. So a lot of these individuals has already been well documented in various countries like Uzbekistan. Some of these individuals are already in jail. The Justice Department has been trying to get billions of dollars from these people. So it's a very interesting turn of events that have happened in the last week or so. And I think it foreshadows a civil war in Washington, D.C. But I want to talk about an actual war, perhaps preceded by a false flag, terror attack. And I want to tell you why I think that is what's coming on. I'll talk about this in this hour. In the last couple of hours, we have our guest joining us to talk about the Civil War in Washington, D.C. Let's take a look at this video that was put out by President Trump saying, I've been right about North Korea all along. And what he has here is a clip that has President Clinton talking about what was going on with North Korea 23 years ago, and then a clip of President Trump about the same time, saying, I think this is the wrong strategy, and then talking about where we are today. So let's run that clip, and then we'll comment on this. 23 years ago, Bill Clinton. That's the headline here.
This is a good deal for the United States. North Korea will freeze and then dismantle its nuclear program. South Korea and our other allies will be better protected. The entire world will be safer as we slow the spread of nuclear weapons.
All right, then it says 8 years ago, President Trump.
North Korea.
We have the nuclear weapons. They're going to have those weapons pointed all over the world and specifically at the United States. And wouldn't you be better off solving this really potentially unbelievable, and the biggest problem, I mean, we can talk about the economy, we can talk about Social Security. The biggest problem this world has is nuclear proliferation. And we have a country out there in North Korea, which is sort of wacko, which is not a bunch of dummies, and they are going out and they are developing nuclear weapons. And they're not doing it because they're having fun doing it. They're doing it for a reason. And they're continuing to do what they're doing, and they're laughing at us. They think we're a bunch of dummies. I'm saying that we have to do something to stop.
But if the military told you, Mr. Trump, we can't do this.
You give me two names. You're giving me two names. I don't know. You want to do it in 5 years when they have warheads all over the place, every one of them pointing to New York City, to Washington, and every one of our... Is that when you want to do it? Or do you want to do something now? You better do it now.
All right, so then this is 1 month ago.
Missile
so
experts Clinton, tell 23 us years North ago, Korea can now
Trump,
launch a missile
ago.
Over 7,500 miles on a flattened trajectory, putting every city in the United States now in range if the warhead survives reentry.
And then we have General Mattis.
A little over 2.5 hours ago, North Korea launched an intercontinental ballistic missile. It went higher, frankly, than any previous shot they've taken. It's a research and development effort on their part to continue building ballistic missiles that could threaten everywhere in the world, basically. And in response, the South Koreans have fired some pinpoint missiles out into the water to make certain North Korea understands that they could be taken under fire by our ally. But the bottom line is it's a continued effort to build a threat, a ballistic missile threat that endangers world peace, regional peace, and certainly the United States.
All right, now that was the video that President Trump put out. He said, I've been right about North Korea all along. So what you heard there was President Clinton talking about, yeah, we got an agreement, everything's going to be great, we love North Korea. Then that was 23 years ago. Then 18 years ago, I misspoke, it wasn't 8 years ago, 18 years ago. You heard President Trump talking to Tim Russert and saying, I think this is the biggest problem we face. And, of course, that was while Bill Clinton was still president. And we need to do something about that now. Now, the other side of this argument is given to us by anti-war, how Cheney and his allies created the North Korean nuclear missile crisis. And, again, we can argue whether or not it was a good deal. They believe that it was not a good deal with the Clinton administration had struck with North Korea. People in the Bush administration, led by Dick Cheney, decided that they were going to take a different approach. They opposed these agreements. They shut them down. And in the opinion of people like anti-war, they say the record shows that Cheney and his allies derailed diplomatic efforts to curb North Korean nuclear and missile development, not because they opposed arms control, but because these agreements would have been a political obstacle to the group's main purpose, and that was to create a national missile defense program. They wanted to do that. It was something that was going to make money for the military-industrial complex and the contractors behind it. That is also part of the motive. But we're going to talk about where we are now and what's coming up, perhaps, in the next 12 weeks. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We just played for you, President Trump's video showing Bill Clinton 23 years ago saying, we got a deal with North Korea. Everything's going to be fine. 18 years ago, President Trump saying, we don't trust this. And, of course, Bill Clinton was still president. He says, we don't trust this. We need to deal with this now. Or do you want to wait until they are a very serious threat? Well, now we're at the point where they are a very serious threat. And the question is, you know, it is interesting, I think, to go back and look at the difference between the Clinton administration and the Bush administration, how they handled North Korea. This is how we got here. And so it is always instructive to have some reflection on that. But we're going to spend most of the time as to where we're going in the next few weeks, because we may be going to war. And so I just played that clip for you. And that, of course, is one aspect of how we got here. True enough. But as Anti-War points out, and I mentioned just before the break, there were agreements between both the Clinton and Bush administration with North Korea. They were going to have North Korea stop their nuclear program. We were going to give them some replacement power programs, some light nuclear reactors that would not be able to be used to create nuclear weapons and so forth. Republicans did not trust that. And maybe they were right not to trust North Korea. You can make that call yourself as to whether or not you think they were trustworthy. I mean, we hadn't had, up to this point, immediately prior to that, remember we had the demise of the Soviet Union. That was going to bring about a real depression in the missile branch of the military-industrial complex, if you will. And so they really wanted to have a sense of urgency about a national missile defense program. Dick Cheney shut down the diplomatic angle because he wanted to maneuver us into a big national defense program of missiles. So whether or not you agree with that or not, we're now at the position where we now see the North Korean program creating missiles and having an increasing threat as they're able to increase their technological capability and also recklessly shooting it over Japan multiple times. And so the question is, what are we going to do about it at this point? As we've talked about before, there is an intelligence contractor. His name is Rickards, James Rickards. And he believes this is going to happen by March 20th, 2018, within 12 weeks. He has previously, this guy has worked with U.S. intelligence agencies over the last two decades. He once was asked to simulate asymmetric economic attacks on the U.S. financial system. He's an expert at escalation scenarios and at end games. And I'm going to talk about something that is coming up beginning January the 2nd. And it is an exercise, a simulation, an end game scenario that is coming up. It's called Dark Winter 2. And I'm going to tell you about Dark Winter 1. I don't know the details of Dark Winter 2. I just know when it's going to begin. It's going to begin on Tuesday. And I'll tell you about what Dark Winter 1 was about as we come up. But this is a guy who's done these types of scenarios. He's focused on economic attacks and so forth. And he says that he thinks this is going to happen, that we're going to go to war with North Korea within 12 weeks because the director of the CIA told him so, Pompeo. Said he went to a meeting back in October. CIA director Mike Pompeo told a small think tank group, including him, he said, that it would be imprudent to assume that it would take North Korea more than 5 months to have a reliable arsenal of nuclear-armed ICBM missiles. These could strike U.S. cities and kill millions of Americans. 5 months from October the 20th, he says, is March 20th, 2018. That's an outside date, but the war will likely begin before then. Before then. Now, what else is coming along the pike? We also had, just last week, we had the Marine Corps Commandant, General Robert Neller, warning U.S. troops stationed in Norway that a big war was coming. He says, I hope I'm wrong, but there's a war coming. You're in a fight here. You're in an informational fight, a political fight, by your presence. Also, a Chinese general, Wang Gongguang, also said that war will be likely happening before March. He said, the Chinese general said, the war on the Korean Peninsula might break out any time between now and March of next year. In other words, this coming March. Adding that China should be psychologically prepared for a potential Korean War, and the Northeast China regions should be mobilized for that. So it looks like In the event that the U.S. launches a preemptive strike against North Korea, the Chinese military will intervene in defense of the North. All right, so you can take a look at that background. But we've got multiple sources saying this. They think this is going to happen in the next 12 weeks. Now, let's go back a couple of days. And I reported on this, and at the time I reported on it, the more I've thought about this, the more suspicious I thought this was. The fact that we have these four defectors coming from North Korea, one of them, they say now, and the source of this is a South Korean intelligence official who wants to remain anonymous, telling the press that one of these individuals has been exposed to anthrax, has anthrax antibodies. And they talk about the fact that, we could develop vaccines and we got stores of vaccines and so forth. So hold that thought here, because the other thing they said was that Seoul believes that North Korea has chemical weapons, stockpile of up to 5,000 tons, and can produce biological warfare agents such as anthrax and smallpox, which takes us back to Dark Winter 1. Dark Winter 1 was a bioterrorism exercise. It was conducted at Andrews Air Force Base June 22nd through June 23rd, 2001. Dark Winter posited the idea of a bioterrorist attack using smallpox. And so they go through this scenario that was there for the people who were going to be involved in it. They talk about the background, the geopolitical background there. They talk about Iraq, Saddam Hussein. Remember, this is 2001. This was less than 12 weeks before September 11th. It was about 10 weeks before September 11th. And the usual suspects, the primary suspects, were Osama bin Laden and Iraq, saying that Iraq had bioweapon production capability, saying that Osama bin Laden had a senior lieutenant of his who had been caught trying to acquire 50 kilograms of plutonium, according to their exercise scenario, and that he had been attempting to arrange the purchase of several biological pathogens that had been weaponized in the Soviet Union. Then the exercise begins with an announcement from the president that an hour ago the CDC called and confirmed that at least one case of smallpox had been found in Oklahoma City. And now this was something that is, we had not had a case in the United States since 1949 of smallpox. Nobody had been vaccinated for smallpox since 1974. And just in case you don't know how deadly smallpox is, there's no symptoms at the time of exposure. 9 to 17 days later, fever, malaise, rash began. There's no treatment for people once the disease begins, and at least 30% of the people who get it would die. And so they go through the entire scenario. They talk about, first of all, they try to control it in this area. They try to send in first responders. They give them some emergency vaccines and then put them in the field within 24 hours. Of course, that isn't going to give them immunity. I thought that was kind of amusing. But then they go through the whole thing about quarantine, even quarantining entire states, mandatory vaccination, martial law. And I'll give you the conclusion of this when we come back of Dark Winter 1. Dark Winter 2 scenario starts Tuesday.
Live from Austin, Texas, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're talking about Dark Winter. Dark Winter 2 is an exercise that is about to start beginning this next Tuesday. And I think it has an ominous parallel to something that happened in 2001, just before September 11th. And I've been talking about what Dark Winter 1 was about. And the question in my mind, as we look at the rush to have a war within the next 12 weeks with North Korea, my concern is that this is going to be part, it's going to follow the same kind of pattern, same kind of script that we have seen before. I'm concerned we're going to have another 9/11. I'm concerned that there's going to be a terror attack, most likely a false flag terror attack that is going to be created, because we do have, you know, a civil war that is going on in Washington, D.C. over politics, and that is heating up. And there are a lot of people still in power who were involved in 9/11, who still have the levers of power. So when we look at this exercise, Dark Winter 1, June 22nd through 23rd, 2001, a bioterrorism exercise. And this took place, this bioterrorism exercise took place 10 weeks before 9/11. Now, of course, 9/11 was not a bioterror exercise. They're not going to be that obvious about it. But they did have the same individuals at the center of this. They tied in Iraq as well as Osama bin Laden. And in Dark Winter 1, it was a bioterror attack using smallpox. And they go through this. They talk about how the thing gets out of control, all the efforts that they try to do, and how this would get out of control, and ask these individuals that are part of this exercise, so what would you do at this point? Would you have quarantine? Would you have mandatory vaccination and so forth? That's how they're going to run these things out. And, of course, they go down all the different scenarios of martial law. These exercises are part of what they call a continuity of operations, COOP, COOP. If they were to actually go with the initials, it would be COO, COOP, which sounds a little bit too much like COUP, doesn't it? So they don't talk about that. But this is a continuity of government, continuity of operations. Continuity of government, I think, is just keeping the people at the top safe. And, of course, there is that assurance that they give to the people who are going to be involved in responding to this. Not necessarily in on 9/11, but the people who are going to be called upon to go after the usual suspects that they identified in this terror exercise just 10 weeks before 9/11. They were going to be called to go after Osama bin Laden. They were going to be called to invade Iraq. And so Iraq is put in here as a suspect. Everybody said, well, you know, why did we go after Iraq when they said that it was men in caves who took down the, they got into the commercial airline jets. They flew them faster at lower altitudes than the people who had been pilots for decades and in flight instructors who said, the pilots for 9/11 Truth, they said, you can't fly those planes at that altitude and that speed. And, of course, they hit the planes and they just collapsed like never before right into their footprint. And not only that, but these expert camel jockeys who are flying the airplanes were able to take down three buildings like that, even though they only hit two of the buildings. Three buildings just collapsed in their footprint. So if you believe that fable, whatever. But they had already planted this, the seeds of who they were going to go after in this exercise, Dark Winter, 10 weeks before. The military and other responders who are going to be part of this response had already been thinking about these guys throughout that exercise, deeply thinking about Iraq and about Osama bin Laden as being the people that they had to go after. And so they run through the exercise, and they talk about how this thing expands in successive generations. The first generation, which would have hit, according to their time frame, December the 17th, they've got 3,000 people affected, and of course about a third of them are going to die, so 1,000 deaths. Then by January the 3rd, it's up to 30,000 and 10,000 deaths. By the next generation, January the 20th, and, you know, we're going through this about 17 days, each of these generations. It's up to 300,000 infected, 100,000 dead. Then it jumps by the end of the fourth generation to 3 million people infected and 1 million dead in their case. And so how does this all end? Well, they don't really tell you, but they do tell you. This is the last part of the exercise for them to talk about what they're going to do next. They do tell you that the very last part of this scripted exercise that they had 10 weeks before 9/11, says a message is delivered to the meeting. From the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the USA Today, each received anonymous letters demanding the immediate removal, 1 week, of all U.S. forces from Saudi Arabia and all warships from the Persian Gulf. This is exactly what people like Osama bin Laden and the targeted terrorists, you know, which they wanted, that's what they wanted to fix in the minds of these individuals. That's what they had been demanding. Quite some time. So they put these demands out there. And they said, failure to comply will result in renewed attacks on the United States, which will include anthrax, plague, and smallpox. Each letter also contained a genetic fingerprint of the smallpox strain, matching the fingerprint of the strain causing the current epidemic. So I tell you all of this because we just got this anonymous information about a North Korean defector who supposedly had anthrax. antibodies in it. It was anonymous, and it was from an intelligence source in South Korea. And they also mentioned smallpox. And then they said, and we know that the North Koreans have been conducting missile tests biochemical weapons to see if they can survive reentering the atmosphere. And that really struck me as odd. And the more I thought about that, the more I thought, that is not really something that you would do with that. I mean, if you're going to introduce something like this, you would do it quietly. All you have to do is infect one person, as I showed in this exercise, right? Or you just put it in the water supply. Or you spread it in the air in the subway system, as our government has been testing multiple times in the last year. People were very upset about a government test that was going to be conducted on people spreading around, as I said, an inert chemical, so they could test how it was going to be spread around in an area. And people said, you're not doing that here. So word got out on that. And they shut that down. But the question is, as we look at this, is this something, as we've got intelligence sources telling us that there's going to be a war beginning in 12 weeks with North Korea, as we have a general telling his troops in Norway, hey, get ready, we got a big-ass war coming. And then you've got the Chinese general saying, this is likely going to happen, be ready for it, we're going to have to respond. Is this going to be the beginning of a greater war? Maybe not limited to North Korea. Is it going to be something that is going to draw the Chinese into this? And are we going to be the ones to preemptively start this war? Are we going to be seen as the people who did the Pearl Harbor attack that begins a greater war? Or are we going to have something like a false flag attack to make sure that we are the victims so that we now have carte blanche to do what we have been wanting to do for decades here? That's the question. And what's going to happen when we have the next 9/11? Look at what happened after 9/11, how we destroyed America as we know it. They used that false flag terror attack, the idiotic way that this thing was produced. It just, anybody with half a brain, there's so many holes in 9/11. And we've gone over this, for the last 16 years here at InfoWars. We've talked about this. Alex Jones was talking about it day one. And the more you look at it, the fishier it looks. And the more I look at what is about to come up, the fishier that looks. But if we have another 9/11, you can just kiss America goodbye. Because the mindset of the American public is one of make me safe, and I don't care what you have to do to make me safe. Take everything I've got. Take every last freedom that I've got. Destroy any remaining shreds of the Constitution because I want to be kept safe by the government. That's what I'm afraid is coming in 2018. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're going to take a look at some news. And in the next hour, we're going to be joined by Jerome Corsi, also then later by Roger Stone and Lee Stranahan. We're going to take a look at this developing civil war in Washington, D.C. It's very scary. And it's also getting kind of crazy. They now have an email that has surfaced. The Senate Intelligence Committee wants to find out if anybody has had any connection with anybody who is of even Russian descent. Russian descent. I mean, this is McCarthyism on steroids. This is absolutely getting crazy in the level of paranoia that is coming up here. So we'll talk about that, where this is coming. But before we do, real quickly, I want to tell you, I haven't told you about the specials yet this hour that we have. It's the end of the year, and we've had these specials that we put in at Christmas time. We've extended them and added free shipping because so many people like to prepare for their health. And, when you look at the news that I just talked about, there's other ways that you may want to prepare as well coming up in this next year. We may be coming up to some very rough times. going to be a civil war in Washington, and there may be a war with North Korea and maybe even China. Who knows? We're going to see. There might even be a false flag terror attack to justify this, as I just pointed out. But prepare. Prepare for yourself, for your family. Do things to help your health as well. And we've got a lot of our most popular products, 50% off or more in some cases, and free shipping. Here's some of the products that are 50% off. Supermale Vitality, Brain Force Plus, Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine, Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, a great way to get vitamins and minerals without having to take a lot of pills. It's a drink mix, tastes great. Of course, because it's a drink, you can make it taste any way you want. 50% off plus free shipping, all of those products. Also, Secret 12, our vitamin B12 formula, 50% off plus free shipping. All InfoWars Life Select products, 50% off plus free shipping. ProPure, our water filters, 25% off plus free shipping. That is a big savings because those are big ticket items and you're going to get them with free shipping. We also have our newest products, the Real Red Pill, 50% off plus free shipping, and Cellforce and Alpha Power, our other products that we've just introduced, 50% off plus free shipping. Silver Bullet, our colloidal silver, 67% off plus free shipping. Take a look at the sales that we have, our year-end sales that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. Many items discounted from 25 to 50%. Most of them are 50% off. Some that are even 67% off plus free shipping at InfoWarsStore.com. And we thank you for your support. Well, let's talk a little bit about the weather. Everybody's been talking about the weather, and we got some massive Arctic weather coming up this next week. I don't need to recount all the massive amounts of snow that people have already received or the strange donut-shaped formations there in Chicago. We've got Trump trolling the environmentalist in Twitter again. He says, in the East, it could be the coldest New Year's Eve on record. Perhaps we could use a little bit of that good old global warming that our country, but not other countries, was going to pay trillions of dollars to protect against. Bundle up. So they troll these people about the cold weather. And you know, when we look at all this stuff, again, when things get hot, we just saw the, he's joking about this, but Jerry Brown was serious, and they've got people in California suing oil companies because of the fires in California. Look, we have things like the Santa Ana winds, which create wildfires in California all the time, and we have things like the lake effect that dumps massive amounts of snow in the Northeast, and these are things that happen all the time. Sometimes the details change. Sometimes the areas that get them change. Sometimes it's extremely heavy. For instance, I'll give you a personal example. In 2000, just before Thanksgiving, my family and I were going up to Niagara Falls, or as my son at the time, who evidently heard too many commercials, called it Viagra Falls, the honeymoon capital of the world, I guess. But we were on our way to Niagara Falls for Thanksgiving, and there was a, and we get into a family argument about this with my brother-in-law because he went to school in Buffalo and he was there with the biggest blizzard that they'd ever had. Now, in that blizzard, they only got 9 inches of snow, but they had, it lasted over several days and it blew 33 inches of snow off of the lake into Buffalo. So it was massive. And so cumulatively, yeah, okay, there's more snow. But in this particular case, as we were arriving, they had the most snow that had ever been dumped in a 24-hour period in Buffalo. And it was really strange because so much of it happened. And it was only a couple of inches less than the massive blizzard that lasted for several days. And it happened within just about 4 to 6 hours. And they didn't have time to plow the streets because it came in so rapidly. And people around there were expected to have the streets plowed because they're set up for that. I mean, whenever we'd have a snowstorm in North Carolina, even if it was just a little bit of snow, it shut everything down because they weren't prepared to clear the roads. But in Buffalo, they're prepared for that type of thing. But they couldn't get the plows out. And people were driving little compact cars, and they were getting stuck. And they would get stuck in one lane, and then the next lane, another compact car would get stuck, and then another one, and it completely blocked the road, and the snow plows couldn't get through. And so we got stuck in this thing. Some people were stuck for a couple of days, couldn't get home over Thanksgiving. We eventually managed to get out. That's another interesting story. I won't go into that. But the point is that even though they have the lake effect all the time, and even though Buffalo gets a lot of snow, it manifests itself in different ways. Sometimes it's a blizzard that takes place over 3 or 4 days. Sometimes it takes place in just a few hours, nearly the same amount of snow. And it was very localized. Once we got out of this core center of town, just a very, very small area of Buffalo where this happened, the center of Buffalo, once we got to the outskirts of Buffalo, it's completely clear, not any snow at all. So the point being is that if we really do have climate change, because clearly we're not seeing lasting effects. In other words, if that were to happen all the time, that were to be a regular occurrence, then we could say, yeah, the climate has changed. The climate varies. The climate has minor changes within these broader themes all the time. And that's why you can't go in and say anecdotally, well, look, we got record cold here, so that means global warming is not true. Or we got record wildfires, so that means that global warming is true. Global warming is false because the models are false and unprovable. And we've had Lord Monckton on, and he blew that out of the water with the math. There isn't data to support climate change or global warming because this isn't happening on a regular basis. So it's not a disproving of global warming because we have Arctic weather and the California wildfires, in spite of all these lawsuits that they filed, because that's the first response of anybody in California is, let's file a lawsuit. The lawsuits don't prove it either, and they're not going to be able to prove it in court. As we look at the back and forth of what happened on the Jerusalem move and the withdrawal of UN funds, and of course, this has really set off the establishment saying, how arrogant, how dare the United States exercise its sovereignty and say, well, you know what, we have the right to put our embassy wherever we want, and we have the right to contribute whatever we wish. And if you guys are going to criticize us, then maybe we'll give you 8% less, cut it by $285 million. And I said, wow, gee, I wish they'd go further. Let's have some more anti-U.S. UN votes so we can get rid of the other 92% of the funding that we give to the UN. But total, it's $3.3 billion. The Daily Caller went through here and said, well, what about this? What about if instead of cutting funding to the United Nations that thinks that it is sovereign, what about all these different countries, the 128 or so countries that voted against us, all of whom we give money to? Did you know that? We give money to everybody, not just the UN, but all these 128 countries that voted against what we did and said, you don't have the right to do that. You're going to have to do what the United Nations says. And, you know, I said the cumulative money that we send to the United Nations is $3.3 billion. Well, you know, we give $5 billion to Afghanistan, and they voted to censure the United States and the UN. Let's cut that. And let's not stop there. Let's go down all 128 of these countries. Because if you were to do that, the Daily Caller totaled it up and said, that's $24 billion. So that's eight times as much as what we're giving the United Nations. If we just cut all this welfare to these countries that don't like us and cut the money to the UN. How about that? Maybe we could get Bernie Sanders and Bob Corker, who are so worried about the deficit now when they weren't worried about it at all during the Obama administration. Maybe they would join us just to save money, you know, because they're really serious about cutting money now, right? Are they? No, I don't think so. And then when we look at what's happening in the federal workforce, Zero Hedge points out $1 million per minute in salaries for federal workers, $22 billion per year in vacation pay, and other fun facts about federal employees. How about this? The number of federal employees making $200,000 or more has increased by 165%. Those making $150,000 or more has grown by 60%. Okay, so what about the 1% of the government? Oh, you never hear Bernie Sanders and the Democrats talk about that, right? Are they concerned about the wealthy elite? We've got 406,000 employees who made six-figure incomes. One in five of federal employees makes over $100,000. You won't hear the Democrats complain about that.
Making Sense Common Again. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. In the next hour, we're going to be talking to Jerome Corsi. He wrote an article talking about the executive order. It was referenced by QAnon last week as it went through. And he also talks about Google's Eric Schmidt and efforts in the Democrat conspiracy to frame Trump. Yes, there is a coup, and there's going to be a counter coup coming up this next year. So Joram Corsi is going to be joining us after that. We're going to have Roger Stone and then Lee Stranahan coming up in the program. So stay with us. We've got a lot of people to talk about what's going on in politics in Washington. Of course, Al Franken is not going to be part of this discussion, but he says that his voice will not be silent. I am not giving up my voice. Well, you know, it wasn't his voice so much that people had a problem with. It was his tongue. So, Al, you might want to be careful about how you use your tongue coming into the end of the new year. And when we look at the NFL, as I pointed out yesterday, they have canceled the final game of Sunday Night Football, which would have been this coming Sunday, New Year's Eve. I guess they figure it would be embarrassingly low as the ratings have been going through the floor. We just have a new article here. 2017 brought ESPN the lowest number of Monday Night Football viewers in recorded history. And so then coming up on Sunday night, New Year's Eve, they were going to play a game. I said, yeah, let's not televise that. We don't want the numbers to go any lower, do we? To have as they are going through the, collapsing in a death spiral, their ratings, then to try to get people to watch an NFL game on New Year's Eve wasn't going to work very well. So they say despite massive $2 billion in fees, the sports cable network avoided the NFL. People have been avoiding it. They said that only about 12% of cable subscribers had tuned into Monday Night Football on the sports network. And the broadcast hit an all-time low this year. That has massive effects for cable as well, because it always would bundle these sports programs, and ESPN in particular, going back to the very early days of cable, even when we only had a dozen or so channels like CNN and TBN and so forth. They also had ESPN, and now it is going down along with the NFL. And I find it really interesting with all this stuff. As I said before, when you look at what they did to the CEO of what's the pizza place? I want to say Domino's. Papa John's pizza. When you look at what they did to the guy who created that company, they fired him, just kind of like, you know, Apple removed Steve Jobs. It didn't work out too well for Apple either without Steve Jobs. I don't think it's going to work out long-term too well for Apple either without Steve Jobs. Without him, they have lost their innovative edge. But it was also, you know, when you get rid of these guys who created the company, who know how to create this stuff, it just shows that they care, like the NFL, Papa John's cares more about politics and their liberal brand of political correctness. They care more about that than they do about making money. They're not in business to make money. They're in business to change minds. To their political view. The war on Christmas, as Breitbart points out, NFL fines the Saints running back for wearing Christmas-themed cleats, not for kneeling, which is against the rules, as we pointed out when all this stuff started. But, you know, you go out there and you wear some shoes that they don't like, and as they have in the past, they're going to fine you for the shoes. So he's got, like, some elf shoes that he's wearing. And he gets a Alvin Kamara had a pair of Christmas-themed cleats that he wore in the Saints game on Christmas Eve. They did not find that funny, and they did not think that he had a right of free speech to do that. And they exercised their ability to fine him. See, it's not about the money. It's not about the rules. It's about the political agenda that they're pushing. When we come back, I'm going to tell you some of the amazingly absurd things in the segment that we have before Joram Corsi joins us. The amazingly absurd attacks on President Trump that just keep coming from the press. Who is at war with the president? We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Segment, we're going to be talking to Dr. Joram Corsi about his article that came out a couple of days ago. QAnon exposes Democrat conspiracy to frame Trump and claims that Google's Schmidt played a pivotal role. So we're going to talk about the coming and developing a coup, a counter coup, the civil war in Washington, D.C. with Jerome Corsi. Then we'll follow up with Roger Stone and Lee Stranahan and the rest of the broadcast. In this segment, I want to talk a little bit about the press and its desperate attempt as part of the deep state to criticize Trump, to find anything that they can to criticize Trump, and the depths of insanity that we are descending into on Capitol Hill, as well as they start casting the net wider and wider in their Russian conspiracies. But of course, in the last couple of days, we've seen the Pew poll that says that Trump media is three times more negative than Obama, only 5% positive. They point out early coverage of Trump was 62% negative. Obama's coverage was only 20% negative. And how does that play out? Well, it plays out in the sense that you have, we've had some low poll ratings from these same people. But interestingly enough, as Matt Drudge and others pointed out yesterday, he ends up at the same day, same time of the first year of his administration, same place in the polls exactly as Barack Obama was, even though they've had three times more negative press and only 5% positive. The press coverage for Barack Obama was very highly positive. Very little of it was negative. And here's an example from the Daily Bell. They say headlines like these are why Trump isn't worried. And they're talking about the criticism that has come out the last couple of days about Melania, talking about how she has cut down a tree at the White House. She's gone around, and she's not a tree hugger, they say. And they point out that this tree was dying. It was very old, and they wanted to protect anybody that might be standing under it. And who would be standing under that tree? Well, that would be the press. And so as the Daily Bell points out, what would the headlines have been if Trump had left this dead and decaying tree, even after the National Arboretum comes there and talks about the problems with that tree? If they had left it there and it had some branches or something, fell on some members of the press, that was, he did that deliberately. Would have been something else I would have complained about. But what they did was they worked with her. They said, hey, look, it's only held in place by an intricate maze of cables. This thing is going to fall. It's going to hurt somebody, maybe somebody in the press. And in spite of the way the press treats President Trump, they took moves to try to protect the members of the press. So they cut it down. Melania actually made sure that they saved cuttings from the tree to replant. And he said, they made an interesting comment. They said, interestingly enough, this tree was actually planted by Andrew Jackson. And the Daily Bell says, so the media could have said, headlines could have been, Melania orders removal of a symbol of racism, because it was planted by Andrew Jackson, or 200-year-old monument to the Trail of Tears to be cut down. I guess that's the way they would have put it if the Obamas had cut down that tree. But they are desperate to criticize him over anything, real or imagined. Here's Wall Street Journal, as MRCTV points out. Wall Street Journal slams Ivanka Trump for wearing her own clothes. She has a line of clothes. The Wall Street Journal ripped her for wearing her own clothes. They said, our analysis shows that Ivanka Trump dresses, shoes, bags, or jewelry appeared in 46 of 68 outfits that were reviewed, or 68% of them. There you go. They did a statistical analysis of how many times she wears her own line of clothes. Every time she steps out, sporting Ivanka Trump merchandise, Ms. Trump, wittingly or not, is a walking billboard for her brand. So let's criticize them for that as well. And then you got CNN, desperate to get a clip of President Trump playing golf. I mean, how many, did they make a big deal of Obama playing golf, or did they excuse it? Well, they excused it. And so one day they hide in the bushes, not necessarily hiding with the bushes, but maybe the bushes were egging them on to get pictures of President Trump playing golf. But the CNN is always prevaricating around the bush. So they hide in the bushes, they get pictures of him, and then it's a big scandal because there's a white truck that is parked so that they can't get a view of this. As one individual sent me an email. He says, I wonder when they're hiding in the bushes. Was the Secret Service aware of that? Maybe they knew who these guys were. Maybe they didn't take any action on them. Or maybe they were surprised. But they weren't surprised the second day. They put a truck there and it blocked the view of CNN. So they were furious about that. How dare him interfere with the freedom of the press to film him? This is the absurdity that we're seeing. And then, of course, we have a New York Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman, is very proud of the fact that he has lodged 100 legal administrative challenges to the Trump administration during the first year of office. That's one like every 3 days. And this guy, who is so proud of his resistance to President Trump, is reportedly assisting Robert Mueller's investigation. Yeah, they're not biased at all, are they? And then we have Huckabee, though, takes the other approach, Mike Huckabee. He said in a tweet last week, he said, I just saw The Darkest Hour. It opened up on Friday, the movie about Winston Churchill and what was going on in the dark days of World War II, Dunkirk and so forth. If any of you saw Dunkirk, I'm actually more interested in seeing this film because I didn't feel like Dunkirk really had enough of a big picture, a historical context. Plus, I didn't really like the way the timeline jumped around. Chris Nolan loves to do that in his movies. But anyway, I'm interested in seeing this, especially because I'd like to see Gary Oldman playing Churchill. That guy is a master actor. But Huckabee went to see it, and he said, there's a lot of parallels in this. He said, Churchill was hated by his own party. He was hated by the opposition party and the press. He was feared by the king as reckless, and he was despised for his bluntness. But unlike Neville Chamberlain, he didn't retreat. We had a Chamberlain for 8 years, and now in real Donald Trump, we have a Churchill. I thought that was interesting, especially in light of what is going on in the UK. You know, there's the wedding coming up, Prince Harry, and all the talk about how he and Barack Obama are such buddies. I mean, you look at him, he just lights up whenever he's in the presence of Barack Obama. And during the Christmas holidays, he was guest hosting a radio show, and so he wanted to have Barack Obama on as his guest. And Breitbart's London editor pointed out something that had occurred to me as well. Number one, Barack Obama is a guy who absolutely hated Churchill and England. He sent the Churchill bus back. They were talking about having a Churchill. He hated Churchill. But of course, so did the royal family, interestingly enough, right? Not necessarily politically neutral. They tried in the past to always maintain an appearance of political neutrality, but that is disappearing. And there's an interesting thing in this, too, because there's a lot of people in the UK, the progressives, the people who would like Obama, the socialist, hate the royal family. They want to see the royal family go away. And they would be the ones who would like Donald Trump. And so there is a big political risk for the royal family in getting overtly political. As Breitbart London editor points out, the royal family is supposed to be apolitical, but what we've seen in recent years is we've had the Duchess of Cambridge editing left-wing blog, the Huffington Post, and he says, besides this interview with Barack Obama on BBC's flagship news program, more significant than the radio interview is his insistence on inviting Obama to the upcoming wedding and making a point to snub Donald Trump. He said, what these people don't seem to realize is their support lies among conservatives. They might enjoy dinner parties a bit more and taking in left-wing positions, but ultimately, this will result in their own disillusion. We're seeing the same things, aren't we, with the NFL? Their ratings are crashing, just as I said, and yet they don't care. They're going to continue to go down this line. And the royal family is going to alienate the very people who would support them by embracing the socialist left that wants to see them go away. Very interesting. Very interesting. These people will double down in a suicidal attempt to go down this path of global governance through climate control. Nothing is going to deter them, not even their own self-preservation. We'll be right back talking to Jerome Corsi and David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're going to be talking to Jerome Corsi, our Washington correspondent and writer at Infowars.com, about the Civil War in Washington, D.C., the coup, what I think will be a counter coup, whether it's building up to a counter coup. In just one moment, before we talk to Dr. Corsi, I want to remind you of some of the products that we have as part of our extended end-of-year sale, massive discounts and free shipping on a wide variety of products at Infowarsstore.com. We have Myco ZX that's now back in stock, 25% off with free shipping. Everything is with free shipping. Super Male Vitality, Silver Bullet, Brain Force, some of our most popular products, 50% off, plus free shipping. Survival Shield, X2 Nascent Iodine, Secret 12, or Vitamin B12, those are both 50% off with free shipping as well. All InfoWars Life Select products, 50% off with free shipping. And our newest products, the Real Red Pill, Cell Force, Alpha Power, all of those, 50% off with free shipping. Take a look at the sales we have at InfoWarsStore.com. Massive discounts, 50%. Some of the items like Silver Bullet or Colloidal Silver, 67% off. And free shipping on all of these at InfoWarsStore.com. We really do appreciate your support this last year that has allowed us to grow with this program and with the War Room in the afternoon. And it is what funds us. It's what keeps us independent. So we thank you for your support. Let's go to Dr. Jerome Corsi right now out of Washington, D.C. Welcome, Dr. Corsi.
Great to be with you, David. Thank you.
I want to talk to you about the article that you put out 2 days ago. QAnon exposes Democrat conspiracy to frame Trump and claims that Google's Schmidt played a pivotal role. Tell us a little bit about that article.
Well, it was a timeline that QAnon published right around Christmas, and I decoded the entire timeline and had it posted on InfoWars.com a couple days ago and also yesterday on Twitter, and it got picked up on one of the Reddit, the calm before the storm / stream or underscore stream post, one of the subreddits. And basically what I was able to do is when you decode this, what QAnon is saying is that essentially here's the outline of the conspiracy, a coup d'etat, to frame Trump on this Russian collusion theme. And he's making clear, QAnon made clear that Google's Eric Schmidt plays a central role. This is very important because the timeline tied into President Trump's executive order last week that sets up the confiscation of assets for those who are engaged in human rights abuses.
Yes,
and they're
yes.
tied together because Eric Schmidt resigned as soon as that executive order was signed. And the QAnon also noticed that the two were related, that they weren't a coincidence. And so Eric Schmidt is becoming very critically at the center of what QAnon is laying out as a coup d'etat to remove Donald Trump from office.
What was the time frame in which Eric Schmidt resigned relative to this executive order? Do you know the executive order came out on the 21st? I don't recall exactly when last week Eric Schmidt resigned. Do you?
Well, it was announced the same day.
He may have
actually formally resigned earlier, but it was announced on the 21st. In fact, the announcement of it came early in the morning and was picked up on Drudge. And then later in the day, the announcement of the executive order being signed came forward, but that was very subdued. It was not a major announcement.
There wasn't much attention given to that. And the thing that got more attention was that also on the same day, a week ago yesterday, 12/21, there was a hashtag, Sessions Awakes, because of the reports from NBC News and others saying that Attorney General Jeff Sessions had said that he was going to have Justice Department prosecutors start asking FBI agents about Uranium One, because as we know from this eyewitness, this whistleblower who came forward this just a couple of months ago, he had been working with the FBI. They were investigating corruption with the people who were involved in Uranium One and the purchase. And it's something that should have prevented that sale, but it went ahead nevertheless. And then they put a non-disclosure agreement gagging this eyewitness to this, or whistleblower, however you want to put it, to this corruption. And so that continued to go on. And so when Sessions says, hey, we're going to take a look at the people that were involved in this, and here's a quote, Dr. Corsi, from NBC News. A senior law enforcement official who was briefed on the initial FBI investigation told NBC News that there were allegations of corruption surrounding the process under which the U.S. government approved the sale, but no charges were filed. Now, if there's corruption, that goes back to this executive order that I talked about for an hour yesterday, where it kind of lays out something that's very similar to what we've seen the Justice Department and other lawyers use to go after the mafia, the RICO type of strategy, where they come after these corrupt organizations, confiscate their money, and that's the only way that they could get convictions against the mafia. I kind of see this executive order falling along those same lines, that coming out the same day that they start to open up Uranium One. And when we see at the bottom of that executive order, 6 of the 13 people explicitly named have very close connections to the Clintons and to the Clinton Foundation.
Well, I think you're onto something, David. I mean, I agree that there's a counter coup going on. There's a counter revolution going on right now. And I'm, you know, with my background, having worked in with intelligence for many, many years, I'm going to follow QAnon now on a regular basis. I started that this past few days over the this week. I really decoded this one very long post of QAnon on the timeline, and I'm going to continue following it on a daily basis. Now, to really understand what this, how this executive order is going to be used, I think we want to see the first people who are going to be impacted by it. But it is a RICO strategy. It allows Treasury to confiscate the assets of those who are involved in human rights abuses. Now, this could also include pedophilia and other sex trafficking abuses. Mm-hmm. And I think there's some speculation and reason to think that maybe President Trump is going to go after the pedophilia issues very strongly, as well as the corruption issues involved with Uranium One and the other abuses listed, because Treasury put out a an annex of some 13 people named that they were targeting. And these are international criminals, most of whom are very tightly tied to the Clinton Foundation as donors and major donors and participants in the Clinton Global Initiative. Donors of the foundation and participants in the Clinton Global Initiative. Now, if President Trump starts moving in this direction, and I also think another major force in this counter coup is Congress. I'm looking very closely at what Nunes is doing with the Intelligence Committee. And I think you've got also House and Senate Judiciary and Intelligence Committees, four committees, are going to start applying pressure on Sessions to do internal investigations with what we've learned has come out of the corruption within the Department of Justice and the FBI. So I think it's going to be a very different year this year with Trump preparing to go on the offensive.
Yeah, let's talk. We got to come up to a, we're coming up to a break. When we come back, I want to go a little bit more into Schmidt and the interesting timing of him leaving Google at the same time this executive order comes out. So we're going to come after any organizations that were corrupt or any individuals and people who were associated with them. How wide is that net going to be cast? And also, what you talk about in your article here is the Debbie Wasserman Schultz connection and QAnon saying that maybe she had MS-13 put a hit on Seth Rich. We'll be right back.
Information warfare against pushers of fake news. You're listening to Real News with David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Dr. Jerome Corsi. I want to get him to break down what he wrote about in QAnon's analysis, pointing the finger at Google's Eric Schmidt, who, interestingly enough, severed his ties with Alphabet, with the parent company of Google, the same day that we had Jeff Sessions, as people pointed out, the hashtag Jeff Sessions awakes, because he said he was going to have a take a look. Justice Department prosecutors are going to be interviewing FBI agents who knew about corruption prior to the Uranium One deal going through, and also who were involved in putting a gag order on the whistleblower. So on that day, we have Jeff Sessions coming out saying, I'm going to investigate Uranium One. And he also, we had the executive order that came out, which basically said we're going to take a RICO-like capability to come after people involved in corruption. And then Eric Schmidt resigns from Google. So tell us a little bit about Eric Schmidt's appearances throughout this timeline from QAnon, Dr. Corsi.
Well, Eric Schmidt has been critical to the entire coup d'etat against Trump. I mean, he starts out, first of all, he says to Hillary Clinton, I want to be one of your major outside advisors. And Google puts together for Hillary her IT system, you know, which is at the heart of the theft from inside. I believe it was an inside job by Seth Rich to steal the DNC and Podesta emails and get them over to WikiLeaks. But every step of the way, that's investigated. That DNC break-in is investigated by CrowdStrike, which is an outside firm that Google has invested heavily in, Eric Schmidt. And they said, well, it's Russian collusion. Of course, WikiLeaks quickly publishes Vault 7, which shows that the CIA can do a hack and leave fingerprints, making it look like it's the Russians. And so the
and of course, they refused to turn over their servers, too, to let anybody verify this. They said that they had found evidence of Russian hacking because of viruses that were basically public domain type of stuff. They weren't like state intelligence. John McAfee had shot that down. But now there are calls out there saying, hey, it looks like maybe CrowdStrike might have even planted evidence on DNC hacked, quote unquote, hacked servers. So there's a lot of pushback now on this narrative. But again, CrowdStrike at the center of this and their connections to Google, as you pointed out.
And then it continues. I mean, you get Eric Schmidt, who is involved with Perkins Coie. Perkins Coie, once the CrowdStrike report tanked because the CIA could have easily created or CrowdStrike could have planted the evidence that it was a Russian hack, which it was not, to break into those emails. It was really Seth Rich who stole them from inside. I've argued that from the very beginning, and QAnon agrees. And so therefore, they switched over to the Fusion GPS document. And of course, it started getting funded by the Clinton campaign and by the DNC, and it got funded through Perkins Coie, the law firm. Well, Perkins Coie is also the law firm that did the Obama birth certificate, that whole fraud. And Perkins Coie is very heavily involved in Silicon Valley and represents Google. And Eric Schmidt's very close to Perkins Coie. So what the Clinton campaign did and DNC in order to launder their payment to Fusion GPS is they paid the law firm Perkins Coie, and Perkins Coie then paid Fusion GPS. And again, you've got Eric Schmidt at the center of that because he's coordinating with Perkins Coie, and he's behind the investment that's going into Fusion GPS. He's a major investor in the Clinton campaign.
So it's kind of like it's not like the 6 degrees of separation of Kevin Bacon, you know, where you can take a Kevin Bacon, see people that are connected with him, pretty much connect him with 6 degrees of separation to every movie. This guy, Eric Schmidt, he's maybe only got 1 or 2 degrees of separation to Hillary Clinton, to the DNC, to Obama, going to the Obama White House hundreds of times in a year. You know, this is a guy who basically hung out there. So it's not any secret that he's deeply connected. But now we're seeing how deeply connected he was in these movements at the center of coming after President Trump. But let's move on now to Debbie Wasserman Schultz, because there's some interesting parts in this article that you had on the 27th about Debbie Wasserman Schultz. And I think this is also very interesting. The guy who's been following Imran Awan and the rest of these people that were brought in by Debbie Wasserman Schultz as IT people, they paid them an exorbitant salary compared to other IT staff. They had no IT qualifications. They were being investigated for stealing computer equipment and so forth. That's how this whole thing kind of got rolled up. But they also had connections to people who had connections to Hezbollah. Now we've also got connections with Obama to shutting down investigation of Hezbollah. So this all stuff is coming around. But the guy who was doing this at the Daily Caller, Luke Rosiak, who had been at the center of this investigation, says, hey, this is kind of strange. The Awan brothers had a January court date, January the 8th. It's not showing up on the court calendar as of now. And so he posits the question, have they struck a deal maybe with Jeff Sessions to testify, pointing out that the wife of one of these, it was Imran, I think, his wife got out just before they close the net on these people. She safely got out of the country, but now she has reached an agreement to return to the United States. Are these guys going to start singing about Debbie Wasserman Schultz? What do you think, Dr. Corsi?
I think it's very likely. I mean, clearly what QAnon says, and I argued from the beginning that Seth Rich was murdered and that the D.C. police suppressed the evidence of the murder, wouldn't let anybody get into the inside of it to investigate it independently. Now, QAnon in this long timeline basically said that Debbie Wasserman Schultz paid MS-13, the Hispanic gang, to do a hit to kill Seth Rich, to do it both in retaliation for having stolen the DNC emails, Podesta emails, and getting them to WikiLeaks. Could have done it with a USB drive. It was an internal job. And also to prevent any further leaks or any further damage that could be done by Seth Rich. But it was pretty startling when QAnon just directly says Debbie Wasserman Schultz put out a 187, which is a kill job, on Seth Rich, and the two these MS-13 gang members who did the hit were subsequently killed themselves. That would have kind of completed the cover-up of that murder. And I think we need to get that investigation open, and we need to find out really who killed Seth Rich, because it's at the heart of this entire issue of Russian collusion.
We all suspected it was an inside job, somebody blowing the whistle, because there was a lot of dissent within the Democrat Party about the way Hillary had taken it over, how she had shut down Bernie Sanders. And when this happened, everybody was saying that. We had essentially confirmation about it from Julian Assange. And there was also a former British ambassador said, I know that it wasn't a hack. I went to the U.S. and was handed the information by an inside source. And so we've had all these indications coming up in the past. Even William Binney went through and said, hey, in the second batch of stuff that comes out, we noticed that it came out in September. He said, we noticed the amount of time that took for the files to transfer based on the timestamps here. And he says, we've done our tests. And he says, there's no way that this was hacked. It had to have been put on an internal disk drive and handed over to people. So now we have something else dropping where QAnon says that he believes that Debbie Wasserman Schultz was the one who had Seth Rich killed.
Yes, and I think that the Awan case, the Awan brothers, is going to have some change, because I agree it is just, something has to be going on, that the court date was dropped.
Yes.
And that certainly does look like some deal has been cut.
Yes.
Now, you know, they are also, with Debbie Wasserman Schultz, at the center of this entire leaking of information that came out of the Democratic National Committee. And they have hard drives which have downloaded information, critical information, on any number of people and members of Congress that they were working for. I mean, that's going to be a very explosive development. But I think
it's looking like they may have been flipped. I mean, with the dropping of the court date and with the wife who is safely out of the country saying, hey, I'm going to come back and testify, that looks very interesting. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Jerome Corsi, and Happy New Year, sir. And we'll talk to you many times, I'm sure, in this coming New Year.
Look forward to it. Happy New Year to you and to the listeners. Thank you.
Thank you. And we're going to be right back with Roger Stone. So stay with us. Welcome back. I'm David Nye, and we're going to be talking to Roger Stone in this segment. And, of course, Roger has been in the news quite a bit, talking about both the opposition to Trump within his own cabinet, as well as the idea of this Russian witch hunt. The Nation has an article talking about Roger Stone. And it's interesting that the left, I think, is taking the position that this is full-on McCarthyism. They're starting to see it for what it is, people like The Nation and others. We've had a letter sent to GOT News Editor-in-Chief Charles C. Johnson's lawyer, and the Senate Intelligence Committee has requested that Johnson hand over access to all of his communications with anyone that Johnson knows or has reason to believe is Russian, or get this, has Russian ancestry. And so many on the left are looking at this, as we've had Glenn Greenwald call this at the very beginning, hey, this is turning into a McCarthyistic witch hunt. We've had many on the left now talking about this and said, Matt Taibbi, Rolling Stone, said this is madness. That's only about 3 million people in the United States who have Russian ancestry, or about 1 out of every 100 Americans. In other words, 1% of Americans have Russian ancestry. And we've seen this before, saying, have you or do you know anybody who's ever been on RT or on Sputnik or whatever? We're going to come after anybody who has any kind of connection, no matter how tenuous, to Russia, and we're going to demonize this. This is coming out of the Senate Intelligence Committee. And now we have people on the left, Matt Taibbi, We have The Nation, other people saying this is the headline. Russiagate is devolving into an effort to stigmatize dissent. So joining us now is Roger Stone. Thank you for joining us, Roger.
David, I'm delighted to be with you. I went out and put on a beautiful double-breasted English tailored suit this morning, only to learn that our camera is down. So I join you via audio today.
Well, thank you for joining us.
What a shame.
We're always happy to have you on anyway.
The Nation article is really extraordinary. Even those on the left are beginning to realize that what we have here is hysterical red baiting.
Yes.
Fear-mongering. Russophobia. It's interesting the way our politics have reversed themselves in the 50s and before that in the 30s. It was those on the right who were accused of being too sensitive to and too anti-communist. Now, that seems to be transferred to the left. This lawsuit, which the article is specifically about, in which I am being sued along with President Trump by the Project for Democracy, which is a Barack Obama-blessed front group, recently brought in an amicus brief signed by the whole front line of the Obama NSA, John Brennan, James Clapper, and the rest of the shaved head crowd, has nothing to do with me. They just repeat their same bogus claim that the Russians are under every rock, behind every tree. Oh, they've interfered with the election. They offer no proof. And they offer nothing that ties me to any of this, if it even really happened. So now it's extraordinary. Even publications like The Nation are catching on to the fact that this is an attempt to stigmatize all dissent.
Article, Roger, what they point out is that in this brief that's there, they say the complaint that was filed says that it does not contain any hard evidence that the campaign did anything. So The Nation is pointing this out. I mean, certainly they don't agree with us on the policies. They don't agree with Trump. But they don't want to see political dissent and opinion criminalized like this. And they're very concerned, as you point out, the front line of the National Intelligence Services, Brennan, Clapper, and others, being politicized like this. This concerns The Nation, and they should be concerned. I've been saying that people on the left and the right, regardless of what you think about this, the thing that you should fear is this politicization of the intelligence services. You know, when Megyn Kelly was here, she said, oh, did you see my interview with Putin? I said, I'm not worried about Putin. I'm worried about the CIA and the NSA being politicized in this country. I see that as the greatest danger. And now The Nation is saying the same thing as well.
And they're responsible, David, for the erosion of our civil liberties. I mean, we know from the FISA court disclosures in November that the Barack Obama NSA was surveilling as many as 30,000 Americans, overwhelmingly Republicans, for what was clearly just an act of political espionage, using the state spying apparatus financed by the taxpayers to spy on the Republican presidential candidate and his campaign. 10 times worse than anything Richard Nixon was ever accused of in Watergate.
Well, you know, it was Michael Hayden who bragged to students at Washington and Lee, and I bring this up frequently. He said to them, we don't look at bad people. We're interested in interesting people, and this is exactly what we have seen. They're interested in people like President Trump. They're going to be the first line of what this, what William Binney said when I interviewed him. He said, they have become the Praetorian Guard. They're going to pick who the leaders of this country are, because they're the real leaders eventually. The people who were set up to protect the emperor then start picking the emperor.
No, it is out of control rogue elite that are seeking to subvert our democracy. And it's funny, the left went so crazy about Watergate. No person is above the law, they told us. Yet it appears to me like Obama and his NSA have violated the law, have violated my civil liberties, the civil liberties of Donald Trump and his family and his associates. And at this point, it appears they will pay no penalty for it whatsoever.
Yeah, that's interesting. And the other thing that The Nation pointed out in this, they said, you know, this lawsuit, this amicus brief that was filed there, says that Russia deploys, quote, active measures that seek to undermine confidence in democratic leaders and institutions, to sow discord within the United States. what is it that the Russiagate investigation done by these same people is doing? It's doing all of that. It's active measures. It undermines our democratic leaders, our institutions, and it's sowing discord. That's precisely what they are doing.
Notice in the same article, it cites the amicus brief as saying that the Russians work through political operatives, and it goes on to say academics and so on. That's an implication. It's a bogus implication. There is no evidence whatsoever, nor did I ever have any contact with any Russians or individuals working on behalf of Russia during or before the presidential campaign. The entire Russian collusion is a delusion, yet Congressman Adam Schiff and Congressman Nancy Pelosi, who have already spent millions and come up empty-handed, want to continue the probe and spend millions of more of the taxpayers' money in what is clearly just a naked partisan attempt to smear the president.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. Now, the question is, you said they may not pay any penalty for this, but I think there may be a question as to whether or not there is a counter coup that is beginning now. We had a week ago, I was just talking to Dr. Jerome Corsi about what had happened a week ago. We had Attorney General Jeff Sessions say, hey, we're going to start interviewing people from the FBI about the Uranium One deal. On the same day, we had an executive order quietly signed by President Trump, not much attention, but what it looks like is a RICO type of statute to come after the assets of anybody who is involved in corruption. And of course, when we're looking at corruption, we're talking about Uranium One. And specifically listed, Roger, 13 individuals, six of whom have very close ties, as I talked about yesterday, to the Clintons. Is this a move, you think, like we've had former prosecutors invoke the RICO statute against organized crime families? Is this a move to invoke something like that against the organized crime family of the Clintons?
Well, David, from your mouth to God's ear, this certainly does seem to be tailored specifically for the Uranium One scandal, where we know that Mr. Mueller, Mr. Comey, both as FBI directors, Mr. McCabe as the assistant director of the FBI, and U.S. attorney then Rod Rosenstein were up to their hips and had full knowledge of both bribery and other improper and illegal activities surrounding the sale of 20% of Americans' enriched uranium supply to a company controlled by the Kremlin. I think Alex Jones has hit this better than anybody I know. Think of the chutzpah involved. They're accusing Donald Trump of being in bed with the Russians when we now learn it was the front line of the Clinton and the Obama administration who were, in fact, in bed with the Russians. They're the ones who were colluding with the Russians against America's interests. So
typical liberal projection, isn't it?
Yeah,
projecting their crimes onto other people, hoping that they can hang other people for what they have done. And, of course, as we pointed out before, the same central characters involved in that Uranium One are leading this investigation. Can you stay with us one more segment, Roger?
Absolutely. I want to do
all right. We'll be right back with Roger Stone. I'm David Knight.
Studios in Austin, Texas. It's The Real News with your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Roger Stone. In the last segment, we were talking about the Russian gate insanity devolving into the kind of witch hunt that is looking. Senate Intelligence Committee is actually asking anybody, have you ever talked to any Russian citizens or even people of Russian descent? And many people on the left are saying, are you serious? Are you serious? You're talking about 1% of the population has Russian descent. My wife has, she's half Italian, and on the other side, it's Polish and Prussian. She says, is that going to get me in the Russian investigation? I mean, this is the desperation and the insanity of people. But we were just pointing out, Roger, that this may be turning now at this point as Jeff Sessions awakes, or maybe this is something that they've been laying out for quite some time. What do you think is going to happen next?
Well, David, I myself have just received a letter from the Senate Judiciary Committee asking me to answer a number of questions. And the incredible thing is that if anyone on the Senate Judiciary Committee staff or any member of the Senate who's on the committee had read my under oath statement before the House Intelligence Committee, I've already answered every single one of their questions in detail. So they're falling over themselves here in an effort to prop up what is clearly a flagging investigation. But I have come to the conclusion, David, that the executive order that you just cited may be the precursor to a move that we at InfoWars have been advocating now for several weeks. And that is that the president of the United States, completely within his authority, order Jeff Sessions to appoint a special prosecutor, a special counsel, in the matter of Uranium One. That would put Mr. Mueller, Mr. Comey, Mr. McCabe, and Mr. Rosenstein under immediate federal investigation. I'm going to amend that view now. I've thought about it after I did an interview with C-SPAN, which I taped last Friday and which aired this past Sunday. I think the president should fire Rod Rosenstein right now. And the reason for that firing is he has violated the ethical rules of the Justice Department because he appointed a special prosecutor, in this case, Mr. Mueller, with whom he has a close personal relationship. Yes. The rules say that even the appearance of a conflict is grounds for dismissal. That way, if the president appoints, orders Sessions to appoint a special prosecutor, and Sessions demurs, which seems to be possible, the decision would then not be bucked to Rosenstein, but would go on instead to the Solicitor General, who I believe would carry out the president's orders. Rosenstein is a menace. Rosenstein is an asp in the bosom. It's time for President Trump to give this guy his walking papers.
Yeah, he was involved with Comey for a long time and with Mueller going back as part of this uranium stuff, Uranium One stuff. These guys have all been working together for quite some time. And it was just this last week that Alan Dershowitz said the same thing you just said, Roger, about even the appearance of a conflict of interest when he was talking about Andrew McCabe and saying he should never have been involved in investigating Hillary Clinton because of his deep ties and his wife's ties to McAuliffe, to the DNC and so forth, as she was running for office. He should have never let himself get in that position. But, of course, these guys, like McCabe, like Rosenstein, they don't play by the same rules that Jeff Sessions does. He was overly cautious, many people believe, because all he had done as a senator was to talk to a Russian ambassador, which senators do all the time. But because that could be construed by some people as a conflict of interest, he removed himself out. And yet these people like Rod Rosenstein, as you just pointed out, and Andrew McCabe, who have, I would say, not just the appearance of a conflict of interest, but real, serious conflict of interest, have continued to keep themselves at the center of these investigations. Stay with us. We've got one more segment with Roger Stone. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. David Knight, and we're talking to Roger Stone at the top of the hour. Many of you have a news break at the top of the hour, radio stations. We had a bit of new news from Roger Stone saying that he has now gotten another letter from the Senate Judiciary Committee to respond to them and asking the same types of questions that had been asked of him in a closed session. Roger, is this something that they want a written response to, or do they want you to come talk to them? Is it going to be a public questioning that is coming up with the Senate Judiciary Committee?
Well, they have given me a deadline to respond to their questions in writing, which we are working with my lawyers to do. It's not very difficult because I've answered all these questions previously. It's very clear to me that between the House and the Senate, the left hand does not know what the far left hand is doing. and there's enormous duplication here, but I'm going to respond forthrightly and completely to all their questions yet again, because I frankly like to clear the air on this whole Russian matter. Going back to our previous conversation, it is absolutely clear to me that the president should terminate Rosenstein immediately and then order Sessions to appoint a special prosecutor. Now, the president has said a number of things in tweets and in interviews which lead me to believe that his lawyers have told him that it is somehow improper for him to issue orders to the Justice Department. David, that's not true. The Justice Department is an expansion of the executive branch, and the president has full authority to call Jeff Sessions and give him a direct order. The left has been so much more effective at weaponizing the judiciary against conservatives. Republicans, I think, respect the Constitution and they respect the division of powers. And we have not used our Justice Departments during Republican presidencies as a vendetta a vehicle, as a political vanguard. Perhaps it's time for us to finally do so.
Well, as you pointed out, the Justice Department is under the executive branch and the FBI is under the Justice Department. That's why President Trump could fire Comey. And that's why people like Alan Dershowitz have said there is nothing improper about him doing that. That's not a criminal act that the left is up in arms so much about. So, yes, he could get rid of Rod Rosenstein as well. How do you see this? Of course, you have the interview that was on C-SPAN, and we have that on Infowars.com. Excellent interview. Great job that you did there on that broadcast, Roger. And if people want to see that, they can see that at Infowars.com. But as we move forward with this, and as we see the many things that are coming up, as you pointed out, I think Rosenstein should be removed. But I think that Jeff Sessions truly has awakened. Because not only did we get the announcement that they're going to be investigating deposing FBI agents about Uranium One, we had the executive order that would basically give RICO power to them to take away the assets of people who were involved in corruption. But then we also see that, and this is kind of an interesting development that I just noticed today, Roger, and that is the Awans, Imran Awan and others, it appears that maybe something is brewing with the Justice Department, because they had a January the 8th court date. Luke Rosiak, who's been reporting, broke all these stories about Imran Awan and the family and their relationship with Debbie Wasserman Schultz. He points out, hey, they had a January 8th court date. That has disappeared, and I can't find it anywhere. And the wife, who had escaped from the country, has now agreed to return and to testify. Are they turning these people, you think?
Well, we now know extraordinarily, David, that House Speaker Paul Ryan knew as early as September of 2016 what the Awans were up to and what they had done. Mm-hmm. He knew that they at that point had stolen as much as $16 million in cash through bogus online financial transactions regarding the House computer system. Yet he did not go public or allow the House to go public with that information until after the election. I'm really scratching my head about that. Luke Rosiak has done extraordinarily effective reporting on this entire issue. And it appears to me that the Awan brothers penetrating the House computer system really is an act of a breach of national security, I guess is the best way to put it. This may be a much, much bigger scandal than the mainstream media has acknowledged.
Here, you know, they are They're corrupt in so many different ways. They're paid extraordinarily high salaries by Debbie Wasserman Schultz, even though they had no IT credentials. So there obviously is something going on, just besides the fact that they are petty criminals. There was something going on with Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Well, more troubling is the fact that after Wasserman Schultz was formally informed by the Capitol Hill police that the Iwan brothers were under investigation, she changed their status in the House computer system from consultant to staffer to allow their uninterrupted access to the House computer system.
Yeah.
That means that, in my view, she becomes an accessory in their crimes, an accessory in their theft of both data and money. Yet here in Fort Lauderdale, this story has yet to appear on page one of the Fort Lauderdale Sun Sentinel, the dominant newspaper in Deborah Wasserman Schultz's district.
Wow, wow. And, of course, we have seen the clips where she was threatening the Capitol Hill police, saying, get me back my laptop, because they had confiscated some stolen disk drives and other things from the Iwan brothers. And she was very concerned about what was on there and threatening the Capitol Hill police chief with consequence. There will be consequences for you. They got that on tape. I mean, she is very worried about what they're going to find out there. But we may have not only the disk drives singing, but we may have the Iwan family singing some stories about Debbie Wasserman Schultz, whether it's picked up in her local district's newspaper or not.
She reminds me of every man's first wife. I mean, in all honesty, I don't know how you could wake up.
Not my first wife. My first wife's great.
I was joking, of course.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
This woman is a terror. She is arrogant. She's entitled. She has kind of the same attitude as Sheila Jackson, the congresswoman we talked about on the War Room, who pitched on an airline because she feels entitled to be treated differently than the rest of the American citizens. No, I think there are serious crimes here. Again, though, why Jeff Sessions' Justice Department has not opened an investigation into Wasserman Schultz, why she hasn't been charged as an accessory in the crimes of the Iwan brothers, when she very clearly continued their access to the House computer system after she knew they were under investigation. I think makes her a conspirator.
Yes, and again, as you pointed out with the parallels to the Queen of Sheila, Sheila Jackson Lee, telling everybody, I am a queen from the very beginning of this. I mean, the arrogance of these people is exceeded only by their corruption, isn't it, Roger? It's just absolutely amazing what we're seeing from these people in power, and in power for a very long time.
No, we see John Conyers leaving the House, and there he hands the seat over to his son, so that the pattern of corruption and arrogance can continue. David, it's an outrage. But we continue to denounce it here at InfoWars.
That's right. Well, at least they're going to get rid of Al Franken. He may not be shutting up. He said he still has his voice, but he's lost his seat.
Well, his biggest problem, of course, is that he's a comedian who was never funny. Never
That's right.
funny.
That's right. That's
I mean,
right.
He's going to do a living now because he can't make people laugh.
That's right. Yeah, that joke that he did with that the bad joke that he did with the photograph, that has come back to haunt him as well. But it'll be good riddance for him. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens. And if we had any more time, we're out of time right now, but I'd talk to you about your comments. We've talked about that in the past, and you talk about it a good deal on the C-SPAN interview about the opposition within President Trump's cabinet. It's a broad-based opposition, but he has withstood this throughout the year. And I think we're going to see a counterstrike. It looks like everything is lined up for that. Thank you so much for joining us, Roger Stone. Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, David.
We're going to be right back with Lee Stranahan. Stay with us. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're going to be talking to Lee Stranahan in this segment. Before we get to Lee, I want to tell you about the products that we have as part of our year-end sale. This is the last day before the New Year's. I don't know how much longer this is going to last, but we extended our Christmas sale, our discounts, and added free shipping. And let me tell you about some of the very popular products that we have that are 50% or more off, plus free shipping. We have Super Male Vitality, Brain Force Plus, Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine, Secret 12, our vitamin B12 formula, all of those, 50% off, plus free shipping. Things like Silver Bullet, 67% off, plus free shipping. And some of our newest products, the Real Red Pill, Cell Force, and Alpha Power, all of those are 50% off plus free shipping. It's a great time now to stock up, to take a new lease on life, to do something for your health, for the health of your family. Be proactive. And this is a great time to try some products that you haven't tried, see what they do for you. And you can get them 50% off plus free shipping. And then some other products. So we have ProPure products, 25% off plus free shipping. If you don't have a water filter, you need to make sure that you have a clean water. And you can get that plus free shipping. Big savings when you're getting a big dollar item and a something that is heavy. The free shipping plus the 25% off ProPure products. And then DNA Force, 33% off with free shipping. Take a look at the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We really do appreciate your support, especially over this last year. And we wish you a happy new year. Let's go to Lee Stranahan now. And, of course, he has been a reporter for news organizations both left and right, Huffington Post and Breitbart. He's currently with Sputnik News. He has a radio show there, Fault Lines, with Garland Nixon. That makes him a suspect to people in the Senate. I was just talking to Roger Stone about how people are shaking their heads in disbelief as a Senate Intelligence Committee wants to interrogate people if they are Russian or even have Russian ancestry. And some people like Matt Taibbi are saying, are you kidding me? You're talking about 3.3 million people, about 1% of the U.S. that have Russian descendants in their background. This is absolutely insane. And we got The Nation coming out and saying, are you going to criminalize political dissent? Are you going to criminalize journalism? And of course they have. They've listed RT. They've listed Sputnik as saying these are criminal organizations. We need to be suspicious of anybody who has ever been on these organizations. So I'm proud to welcome you as being part of Sputnik. We talk to Lionel all the time, and he appears regularly on RT. I mean, this is absolute insanity, isn't it, Lee?
It's actually very scary, David. And once again, I hope you had a great Christmas. And
yes,
Happy New Year. Really appreciate you having me on the show.
Thank you. Same to you.
Because, and one of the reasons I always say that is because I'm going to be honest. Frankly, a lot of people are intimidated right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we have people who, and look, I'm sure you deal with the same thing. In a different way, the same people have tried to marginalize and demonize InfoWars.
Yes.
But who are they really trying to demonize, of course? They're trying to demonize the audience. See, what they want people to do is don't listen to this. Can't listen to David. Can't listen to David Knight because he's on with Alex Jones and it's conspiracy theory and blah, blah, blah. Well, this is the same people who are saying, hey, don't listen to Sputnik. Don't listen to Sputnik. And what I tell people is listen to everything. What we're seeing here, the biggest underreported story of the year, the broadest underreported story of the year, is this is the year the deep state really hit back. The deep state is scared to death of InfoWars. They're scared to death of independent voices like we do at Sputnik. You know me, David. People are like, well, how do we know you're not Russian propaganda? Because I just don't roll that way.
No, absolutely not. And they are you talking about linking us together? They Washington Post did a hit piece on RT, on Sputnik, and they included us and featured us even more so than RT or Sputnik. So, yeah, it is a pushback against anybody that is outside of the establishment media that is closely linked to the deep state. And even people on the left that are independent, like The Nation and so forth, they're pushing back on this and say, you're trying to stigmatize dissent. And focused on Roger Stone as an example in the frivolous lawsuit that's been taken out against him. Absolutely where they are.
These are people who didn't have a huge problem with Russia when they were communist, right? In other words, it's just the truth. Yeah. When it was the Soviet Union, by the way, not a fan of the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. I'm not at all a fan of the Soviet Union at all. I'm not a fan of communism at all. And that's when these people didn't have an issue with it. Back then, McCarthyism, right, was when you called people who were actually communist spies. You know, I've interviewed David Horowitz, and I'm friends with David Horowitz, Red Diaper Baby, right?
Mm-hmm.
Back then, the U.S. Communist Party was literally an arm of the USSR. Okay,
That's
well,
right.
you can't Can't criticize them, right? Can't criticize
them. And it was very well known, especially, you know, they talk about Hollywood, for example. But even the Coen brothers, when they came out with Hail Caesar, they go back and they've got all the tropes and the stereotypes, and they have a lot of fun with them, you know, of Hollywood and the 50s and everything. But, of course, one of them was the fact that all these writers were hardcore communists. I mean, one of the guys even defects to a Russian submarine, you know, in part of the movie. But, I mean, it was an open – it wasn't even a secret. It wasn't even an open secret. Everybody knew what was going on with that.
Well, and by the way, part of the reason I mentioned this is going to tie in to the story we're going to talk about a little bit later with this new executive order from Trump.
Yes.
The thing people need to be very wary of here, and I'm going to give another example, then we'll come back and we'll talk about the executive order. People need to be very wary when you're subject to misinformation and different disinformation by the deep state. The CIA has been doing this for 70 years. They're very good at it. And what they've learned, people need to be very wary for this. Don't think it's just the other guy getting fooled. Does that make sense? Like,
yep.
If you think that they're just tricking the left because you're on the right and you're enlightened and you know about fake news and you know about fake media, guess what? They know how to get you too. Look at this Nikki Haley thing. Nikki Haley came out in this sanctions vote. I'm not anti-Israel, but I don't understand how moving the capital to Jerusalem is in the U.S.'s best interest. And a lot of people are out there supporting Nikki Haley on this because she's acting tough, right? Nikki Haley is a huge globalist, gigantic globalist. So don't look at somebody just because there's pictures of her with a rifle or something like that. Go, well, I'm a Second Amendment advocate. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, and, absolutely. And absolutely. Yes.
I think it's
it's kind of interesting that she would be at the UN and that she would be out there virtue signaling by talking tough to the UN. I mean, I'm glad they cut 8% of the budget. I wish they'd cut the other 92% of the budget. I understand exactly what you're saying about Nikki Haley. And what I want to talk to you about when we come back, again, this executive order, and it has a lot of the people that you are very well aware of, you've been talking about in detail for the last year, people like Natalia Veselnitskaya, as well as CrowdStrike, all these different things that are coming through here, but direct connections to people that have been identified as corrupt organizations. And when we look at this, is one of the things I said, you know, I am concerned about the issue of RICO statutes and that tactic. However, somebody who is coming at this from the perspective of Jeff Sessions, who likes these types of civil asset forfeitures, they also understand that was the way that they got convictions against mafia families. We're looking at the biggest mafia family ever in the Clintons and the Clinton foundations. And I think that this may be a move.
And now, live and uncensored, broadcasting from the great state of Texas, worldwide, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Lee Stranahan, citizenjournalismschool.com, also thepopulist.us. And Lee, what I wanted to have you on today to talk about primarily is the executive order and the actions that were taken a week ago yesterday by Jeff Sessions. And of course, there was a hashtag that went around Twitter, Sessions Awakes, because he said, we're going to have Department of Justice officials interview some of these FBI agents who were looking at the corruption involved in the Uranium One deal. Before it was allowed by the Obama administration, Hillary Clinton and others, and then put a gag order on this guy in the year of the election in 2016. But then there's this executive order, which did not get much attention, talking about coming after people that were involved in serious human rights violations. This could be human trafficking, could be pedophile networks, but also corruption related to government contracts and the extraction of natural resources. That sounds a bit like Uranium One as well. And then we have 13 people that are listed at the bottom of this executive order. Six of them, as I laid out yesterday in detail, have very close ties to the Clintons or to people who were involved in part of this setup of Russiagate. The first one, like here, Dan Gertler, for example, an Israeli billionaire who has connections to Mark Rich, the guy that Bill Clinton pardoned on his last day in office. after Mark Rich's wife gave $450,000 to the Clinton Library Foundation. Now, the interesting thing is they were connected to this company called Glencore Mining. The corruption that was involved there, Glencore immediately cut its ties with Gertler. Interestingly enough, on the same day this executive order came out, Eric Schmidt had his ties cut immediately with Google and Alphabet. And then there is Natalia Veselnitskaya. And you've talked about her many times, the corruption with Browder and others last time you were on. We were talking about that corruption. What do you make, Lee, of this executive order, and where do you think this is leading as we see all of our usual suspects lined up at the bottom of this document?
Well, I'll be honest, I think it's going to be a contrary position to what a lot of people might think on this, but I think this is a head fake. If anybody thinks this is going to be used against the Clintons, I'll take that bet. It's not going to possibly be used against the Clintons. But the reason I say it's a head fake is the idea here, they know if they can get people on the right, people on who are Trump supporters, people who are you know, people who view Hillary Clinton as the enemy, right? Mm-hmm. Rightfully so, as do I. If they can get them to think, oh, well, this is okay. This is not okay. Now, let's just talk about the broad principle, right? The broad principle here is this is based on something called the Global Magnitsky Act. Now, one of the things I've talked about before is this Magnitsky Act is a complete lie. And this is put forward by a guy named Bill Browder. Now, you don't have to take my word for it. All you have to do is look up two documents. You have to look up his Senate testimony. Bill Browder testified in front of the Senate earlier this year about the Magnitsky Act and about what, you know, how horrible Russia is. Then look at the testimony he gave in 2015, a couple of years ago, in something called the Prevazon Holdings case. And you can find that online. He contradicts his own sworn Senate testimony.
So regardless of which testimony was true, he committed perjury at least one of those times.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, he committed perjury both of those times. Mm-hmm. And he directly contradicts the story that he's been telling. Now, I ask myself, why didn't a single Republican or Democrat ask him? This is a guy who renounced his U.S. citizenship to avoid paying taxes, not the average hero. Yet they gave him a hero's welcome at the Senate. Every Democrat, John Cornyn, every Republican, John Cornyn, forgive me, treated this guy with kid gloves. They didn't ask him a single tough question. And this is why everybody thinks it'll be used something. But the principle here is actually something fairly frightening, which is if you're opposed to the idea of asset forfeiture being used as a tool of law enforcement, which a lot of small government, liberty-loving people are, this is worse. This is across international lines. And what happened in the Magnitsky Act, don't even forget the details of it for a second. Let's say everything Bill Browder says was true, which it's not. Why is the U.S. imposing sanctions on a crime that didn't happen in the U.S.? Because, by the way, there's a lot of that goes on around the world.
That's a good point.
There's a lot of bad
exactly.
stuff.
And I said this yesterday when I looked at it, Lee. I said, you know, this looks very much like the RICO statute. And, you know, I understand why they put the RICO statute in there. They said, look, we can't get these convictions against the mafia figures because they have too much money. They can hire all these armies of top-notch lawyers and they can get out of this. So we got to get their money first. And that became the basis then for coming after civil asset forfeiture, where they don't even charge you with a crime. They take your stuff and then they come after you as well. Or maybe they don't even come after you. They just grab your stuff. So I don't agree with that. But I look at this as a legal tactic, and Jeff Sessions does agree with that. Jeff Sessions is a big supporter of civil asset forfeiture. And Trump is hanging around getting advice from people like Rudy Giuliani who have come after the mafia, who have used RICO. But I look at this, and I disagree with you in the sense that I don't think they're going to use this. They did this very quietly. They didn't talk about this much. There were other things that happened that day, but they did it very quietly. I think if they were going to try to frighten people with this on the Clinton Foundation, use it as a bluff, I don't think they would have done it quietly in the middle of the Christmas break. But I think they are laying the foundation administration to come after these people, many of whom have close ties with the Clinton Foundation. And we've got people with the Laureate Foundation that are running out of that thing like rats escaping from a ship because they're concerned about these same types of issues. I don't necessarily agree with this tactic. Because we've seen RICO then used subsequently against abortion protesters. So I know that it violates the Constitution and the rule of law, and it's been abused, but I still think they're going to use this to come after the Clintons.
I've had RICO used against me, David. I was sued a few years ago by a guy named Brett Kimberlin. People can look him up. Brett Kimberlin's a convicted serial bomber, okay?
That's right, and yeah. That's right. I remember that now, what you're talking about.
I was writing about him, and I wrote about him independently. I did something called Everybody Blog About Brett Kimberlin Day, and this is a guy who went to prison for bombings. He's a hardcore leftist funded by people like Barbara Streisand and stuff like that after he got out. So he sued in a RICO case, me, Breitbart, Glenn Beck, James O'Keefe, about 10 other people too, mm-hmm. who Beck and I don't go to lunch or anything like that. So these are people I've never talked to in a lot of cases. I mean, I know O'Keefe, but there are mm-hmm. a lot of cases people I've never talked to. So we were sued. Now, it was thrown out of court, but not after considerable expense by a lot of people, not me. If somebody sues me like that, I just say, okay, great, I'll be my own lawyer. I'm not going to let people bankrupt me over something like that, but I'm
that's what they're typically trying to do. Yeah,
that's exactly right. But this has gotten abused. I got to tell you, even the Uranium One story, you have to understand, this is what I think the underlying narrative of Uranium One is: Russia's bad. The underlying narrative is Russia's bad. Now, I work for Sputnik, so people may say I'm biased. I'll tell you, do the research yourself. Look into what happened in Ukraine and ask yourself, was the U.S. on the right side of that? By the way, no one's talking about this right now, David. Look it up. Do you know about the protest happening right now in Ukraine, trying to get rid of this guy Poroshenko that the U.S. installed? There's huge mm-hmm. protests. Nobody in the media is talking about it. Go Google it. You'll find it out.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. I agree with you. There's a great deal of that at the center of it, and I'm concerned about the RICO statute. But I do think that this is the beginning of a turning here by the Trump administration. I mean, they're in kind of a civil war. I think that's the core thing here. They've taken these hits, and I think they're going to start turning this narrative in the coming year. But we'll get more comments from Lee Stranahan. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Lee Stranahan. Again, you can find Lee at citizenjournalismschool.com that he runs, also thepopulist.us, and he is co-host of the radio show Fault Lines that airs on Sputnik News. And as we're going to the break, we're talking about whether or not this is going to be strictly focused on Russian paranoia. I think that is a losing proposition, frankly, if they do that. I think, and I'm hoping, that this is something that is broader. We've had Lee in the last week. We had Congressman Rooney, who came out and said, we need to have a purge of the deep state. We need to get rid of these corrupt officials at the top of the FBI and the Department of Justice. I didn't see him say anything about the Russians. But if this devolves into something that is like, I'm a Russian? Well, you're the Russian. If it turns into that, people have gotten so tired of this. And people are waking up, as we started talking about this at the beginning of the broadcast, people on both the right and the left are so tired of this. I see Russians everywhere. Paranoia. That is a losing proposition. If that's the way they're going to fight back against this, I think they lose. But if you look at these people that are at the bottom of this corruption thing, even though six of them have close connections to Hillary Clinton, that's, to me, seems to be the central thing. We've got people from very different nationalities. I mean, we've got a guy, we've got one woman from Uzbekistan, next guy from Israel. The next guy that's in here is Gambia. Then we have Dominican Republic. We have Sudan. And then we have Russia. But all of these people have ties to the Clintons, and very close ties, and a lot of money that was given to Bill Clinton or Hillary Clinton or the Clinton Foundation, with all these individuals who are demonstrably involved in corruption. And so hopefully that is going to be the common thread there. The Clinton Foundation and the Department of Justice and the FBI in terms of this investigation. And I do have concerns that it doesn't turn into a Russian witch hunt. And I do have concerns about the way they're using the RICO statute. But again, it looks to me like that would be the type of tool that Jeff Sessions would be inclined to use.
Well, and here's the thing, David. If David Knight were running the Department of Justice and not Jeff Sessions, I'd feel better about things. Mm-hmm. My concern is when you and I have the discussion, it's two people of goodwill who are both pro-liberty, right?
Yes. And again, if I was running the discussion, we would be looking at the law and we'd be looking at due process and the Constitution. And that, unfortunately, doesn't seem to be on the table either from the Democrats or Republicans anymore.
And that's what I'm worried about. And that's why I say my concern here is more, I see the point you're making. There's no question about that. And if we had a system that I trusted more, then I would do that. But this isn't really born of pessimism. It's born of realism.
Yes.
You know, even the stuff that Rooney was saying about the FBI and the DOJ, which is all true, it doesn't go far enough, because the group that everybody's scared to death of is the CIA. It's very clear. Mm-hmm. This is why we didn't get a proper Benghazi investigation. Let me be clear on that. We didn't get a proper Benghazi investigation because the actual operation that was going on in Benghazi was not about the embassy and Christopher Stevens. It was about the so-called annex, where
that's
it
right.
was shipping weapons to Syria. Right. That's what it was about. It's the reason we didn't get a proper investigation in the 70s on Kennedy. You know, there's more Kennedy stuff coming out in the past 2 weeks that shows that the CIA 100% was hiding information. Alan Dulles was on the Warren Commission. So what I'm, and the reason I mention this is it goes back decades. If you've seen this new film Wormwood that's out on Netflix now, I would highly recommend it. And
I haven't seen that. I'm not aware of that. I'll have to look at that this weekend.
It's amazing. Earl Morris, who did Thin Blue Line, one of our greatest documentarians,
yeah. mm-hmm.
did this
mm-hmm.
six-part series about the CIA. Everyone's heard the story. A lot of people, InfoWars people, have heard the story. Basically, the CIA drugged a guy with LSD in 1953, and he jumped out a window and committed suicide.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Much deeper, and says that that was actually the cover story for them executing him. And mm-hmm. it's a stunning documentary where you just go, gee, I thought it was bad. I thought it was bad that they dosed a guy with LSD and then he killed himself. And then by about, it's a six-part series, but by about episode three, you start going, oh, wait, it's much worse than I thought. And
And I remember the book when it came out. His son did a book to clear his dad's reputation, and you know, he jumped through the window. It was closed. It had curtains, and I can't remember the guy's name. You've seen the series, so you probably know. But they said that he was
Olson.
Visited by a high level official. What's that?
Olson, Fred Olson.
That's right. Frank. Yeah, he was visited by a high level CIA official. Was in his room about the time that all happened. So yeah, it was highly suspicious. And you know, the whole thing too. You go back and you look at all of this surveillance of the American public. That was, you know, we had the church committee hearings, and they all focused on the sensational aspects of the heart attack gun and so forth, and assassinations. And yet, the whole point of the church committee hearing and the Pike committee hearing were they were concerned that they were surveilling American citizens. So they created the FISA Act. Then they used the FISA Act to surveill Mr. and Mrs. Verizon, as Rand Paul said. So they continue to turn this the deep state. How do you pull this back is the question.
Well, let me give you the nightmare scenario here. It goes along with what you're saying, which is they're doing this to send a message to the Clintons. Hey, we can get you. Got it? We can get mm-hmm. you. So you need to stay in line, because this is what I see over and over again. By the way, that's not paranoid conjecture, really. They do this all the time. Look at antitrust right now. Why do you think Google and Amazon and Apple, they are so clear? And I'm not a huge fan of antitrust legislation. That being said, these companies have gone so far beyond where Microsoft was in the 1990s. I've had people tell me in Silicon Valley, they have been told, if you don't play ball, we'll use antitrust legislation against you. And guess what? We see Google and Twitter and Amazon all playing ball with the government, right? So what I'm saying is, when you see people connected to the Clintons, the optimistic part of me would like to go, oh, great, this is the beginning. The pessimistic, and I would say more realistic part of me goes, no, this is a shot across the bow, saying stay in line, don't step out of line. If you step out of line, boom, we're going to take you down like that. And that's what really I'm afraid of here, David.
Yeah, and you know, as I went through this article, as a detailed, in-depth article about this with Zero Hedge, talking about these six individuals, talking about their connections to the Clintons. But before they got to that, they were talking about how lobbyists in D.C., had to be in a complete cold sweat due to this executive order because of the way that they could construe things to come after them, or even talking about Apple. You know, let's say that they're doing business in a country and they, you know, or defense contractor, and maybe the defense contractor has an employee who is a citizen of that country, and they decide that, you know, their sales, they want to get this sale through really badly. So they cut some deals, you know, some internal corruption in that country. That could really blow back on a defense contractor, for example. So what they're dealing with here, if they actually use this against the Clintons, I'd love to see the Clintons go down, but they are really, truly playing with fire. Can you control this fire once you light it?
And that's honestly, that's my concern. See, here's the thing, because I know the origin of the Magnitsky Act because I've researched it, and I see how if you look at the Ukraine thing we touched on briefly, that's a CIA operation. And I just see how it was weird to me that during Benghazi, things that I knew were clearly true never even got brought up. And again, anytime I see the Democrats and the Republicans on the same side, what you learn is that, and it's logically consistent. Look at Washington from the perspective, not as a voter, but as the CIA or the FBI or the DOJ. You're here forever. You've been here for five decades, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And these people who come into Congress, they could be here 6 years. They could be here 2 years. The president's going to be here at most 8 years. And their feeling is the deep state, the reason they feel like they run this town is that, in fact, they run this town. They run Washington, D.C.
That's right. You look at the bureaucracies. They're permanently entrenched. They write the laws and so forth more than the Congress does. And these guys are really the true government. Frank Zappa said, they're, you know, the rest of the government is kind of the entertainment branch of the military-industrial complex in the deep state.
No, that's exactly right. And I, like I say, I've been in D.C. about a year now, and the reason I'm here is because you really learn. I mean, it's not a paranoid conspiracy thing. I understand how people operate here, and they operate because real estate prices are high, and then they get jobs with think tanks, and then they.
Well,
they,
we're out of time, but it's always great talking to you, Lee Stranahan. Again, you can find Lee at citizenjournalismschool.com, thepopulist.us, and on his co-hosting show, Fault Lines on Sputnik. Happy New Year, Lee.